This is the Future of HR podcast, episode 78.
One of the biggest things that presenters tend to do is you think that more is better when it comes to content, and more is never better, right? So everyone's got to leave any talk that you give, whether it's 4 minutes long or 40 minutes long, everybody needs to leave feeling like they got something of value out of it every single time. Even if that's just you with your team of four people, that meeting, that talk, it better deliver some value that makes it worthwhile. Because every time you do that and don't deliver the expected value for the time spent, you're eating into the credibility that you've built with people. If you've got 5 minutes, you can maybe make one point. If you've got 15 minutes, you can make two. If you've got 30 minutes, you can make three. That's about it. You've got to really think about that. And that's really rooted in behavioral science around memory and cognition and synthesis that people absorb.
What makes someone a powerful communicator? Why does every HR leader need to master the art of communication? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level. Hey everyone, if you've been listening to the podcast, then you know I'm incredibly passionate about inspiring and developing the next generation of HR leaders. But you may not know, I'm also passionate about speaking to and working with HR organizations to enhance their capabilities. In fact, one of the coolest things that happened since I've launched the podcast is that several HR organizations have asked me to speak about the future of HR and to support their efforts to develop their HR teams. It's been an incredible honor to work with these HR organizations in 2023, and I'm looking to have an even bigger impact in 2024. If you'd like me to speak to your HR organization, or if I can ever be helpful in building the capability of your HR team, please reach out, as I would love to hear from you. And with that, my guest this week is Gabe Zicherman. Gabe is an entrepreneur, four-time author, and public speaker who is known for his work in gamification and helping people become powerful communicators. His work on gamification and behavioral design have fundamentally altered the future of Silicon Valley and how it designs technology products. Gabe's also recognized for his ability to digest complex problems and turn them into easily accessible, engaging, and game-changing communications that cut through the noise. He's a frequent keynote speaker who also runs an exclusive speaking coaching practice that helps hundreds of successful entrepreneurs, executives, and celebrities communicate beautifully in all settings. And today we're going to talk to Gabe about the art of communication and his latest book, The Aha Method, Communicating Powerfully in a Time of Distraction. And during our conversation, Gabe and I are going to discuss how the power of effective communication can help your career, why more is not better when it comes to communicating powerfully and effectively, why effective communication now requires a different skill set due to the daily distractions of technology, how to create aha moments in your presentations, how gamification will help people develop the soft skills to be successful in the future of work, and why friendships at work can be the foundation for high performance and employee engagement, and much, much more. Gabe, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me.
We're excited to have you in the podcast. And you've been a flexible guest because we had to reschedule. I think you were in London the last time we talked. So we're excited to talk to you.
It's a terrible life. Terrible life.
That does sound like a pretty terrible life, but probably a really good life, actually, because I think you've designed a really good life. We're going to talk more about that. One of the first things I want to talk to you about, tell us more about your career, because you are not only an expert on communications, you're a public speaking, obviously expert, but also a public speaker. You're an expert on gamification. And I just found out you own an ice cream company. So you're like a Renaissance man. Tell us more about how you became an expert on communications and gamification.
Okay. What I would do normally in this place, so what a normal person would do at this point with that question, is they'd say something like, well, I just follow my passion wherever it leads, or they would make up some story about how this was a carefully choreographed and organized journey from whatever academic start I had until now. And the truth is, like, both of those things are just not accurate, right? I'm a big believer in perfection is the enemy of the good, or whatever you're supposed to say there. But basically the point is, I don't like to wait around for things to be perfect before making a decision and moving forward. I like to constantly move forward like a shark that otherwise might die if he doesn't. So my career really looks like somebody who at various important turns just kept making choices. And I've learned over time that as an executive, as a leader, certainly in the startup world, but even I think, you know, if you're an HR leader, one of the most important things to do is not get stuck into a decision paralysis over analysis kind of situation, because you can, I'm a very analytical person. I could spend all year thinking through all the pluses and minuses of every possible decision in the world. So what I did at every turn was just make a decision that felt like the right decision at the time and then move forward from that. One thing that I will say about it though, so, you know, starting off working in tech, ending up an entrepreneur, an investor, a public speaker, TED Talk, book author, whatever I do now, ice cream company guy. All along the way, there have been several threads. And by being able to stay connected to those several threads, I've been able to keep returning back to something in my career that was really engaging for me. So thread number one is I love to communicate. I love being externally facing. I like interfacing with people. That brings me a great deal of joy. Whenever I've been tapped to do a job, a gig, or a project where I've been internally facing, the repeated lesson there is doesn't work out real well. I get really frustrated. And because communication is my superpower, I also don't feel like I'm being put to the maximum value. And then thread number two is it's important for me to feel what I do brings people joy. Blah, blah, blah. The point is all of these jobs, everything that I've done, quirky, odd, unusual, but always kind of, I think you can see it returning to some core elements of my personality that repeat over and over again, and lots of mistakes there as well.
Well, I love your honesty, and I'm with you 100% that we need to take action, right? And we learn by doing. And a lot of times we want to read a book about our career and our career path and sit down and say, well, what do I really like to do? Want to do, you know what? Go try something, go volunteer, pick up a project. I mean, I didn't know I liked podcasting until I started a podcast. I didn't know what a podcast really was until 2022. So that's amazing. I'm not saying I'm good at it, but I think you learn along the way and hopefully you get better, right?
Yeah. One of the things that I say to people, I do very selective coaching of public speakers. So I wrote this book called The Aha Method. We'll talk about it, which is all about helping people communicate better, right? One of the things when I coach people, which I do rarely, but also a thing that I keep coming back to in the book, it's like, in order for you to become a better public speaker, what you need to have is a speech you are working on that you're actually going to deliver. Doing it in a classroom setting, doing it in an abstract setting, talking about all the tips, tricks, hints, hacks, whatever you want to call them, without having an actual speech that you're going to execute, without doing the work, without doing the practice that you need to do, that's not really going to get you where you need to go. So I think it's important in every case to take action, whatever your hit rate is, 30% of the time, 50% of the time, 70% of the time, it doesn't work out, but at least you're moving forward.
Well, and I think you're right, you're moving forward. And I like how you're sticking consistent with two threads. And I think that resonates for people. It's like, what is really kind of core to who you are when you look back at what gets you excited, where you get your energy, and what do you want to focus on? So those two threads make a lot of sense.
Why do people go into HR in the first place? A lot of the HR professionals that I meet, executives and leaders that I've worked with, they're in HR because they genuinely like people, or at least at the beginning, they liked people. Maybe over the course of a career, you get disabused of that. But it really starts from a place of actually wanting to problem solve and liking people. If you feel like you've lost contact with that at any point in your career, if you can no longer see that element of it, and you have to take a moment, take stock and say, is that still actually true for me? And if it's true for me and my life isn't living authentically to that element, then you've got to kind of get back to that, you know, get back to that place in your life.
That's great advice. And I think a lot of HR people, you're right. We obviously enjoy people. We also want to make an impact and make things better for other people. It's kind of a helping people business in general.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
to be successful in HR, and if you listen to my podcast, we know you have to be a business person first, because otherwise you're not going to be able to have the impact that you truly want to have. So helping people is the core, but then you've got to build some skills on top of that. So, and one of those is communication skills. And it's super important. If you want to be successful as an HR leader, you have to be able to influence your executives, tell a story. Many times in our careers, we have to stand up and really communicate. And so I wanted to ask you, Gabe, what made you decide to write The Aha Method, Communicating Powerfully in a Time of Distraction?
Over the course of my career, one thing that I've really seen is the power of effective communication to help advance people's careers. And so often, I think managers, mid-career professionals in particular, think that the ability to run a meeting, lead people, talk to people in groups, that that's something that's just going to develop by osmosis. So if I just do it over and over again, I'll get there. What I've noticed is that by the time you get to the middle, later part of your career, an ability to command a room, to communicate effectively with an audience, to be clear but authentic to your voice, that really delivers a lot of value for people in their career path. So I think it's very important for that to be a key skill that's transmitted to everybody in the organization. But the second reason is that I think much of what we think about public speaking and how we've been taught public speaking or leadership communication is rooted in like a 1950s Dale Carnegie, I just flew in and boy, are my arms tired, yuck, yuck, yuck kind of idea of what a public speech is supposed to be. And to be fair, TED and other public speaking platforms like Toastmasters are not doing anybody any favors because they really funnel everyone into a single kind of voice, vision, rhythm, pattern that we all think that's what this skill set's supposed to be about. So one of the very first things that I did in the book is disassemble that myth and say, you got to figure out what your authentic voice is and learn to be the best version of your own voice in this particular context. So I thought, we need an update. We need new techniques. This is an important skill that everyone has to learn. And the last piece of it is technologies, screens, devices, social media, other apps, and so on that leverage gamification. I know you want to talk about it. Though all of those things make people incredibly distracted, it's also harder to get and keep people's attention today than it ever has been before. As one of the guys who's created gamification and advanced this idea in the world, it was partially my obligation to help right that wrong and help people be better communicators in an era of such distraction. So for those reasons, I thought it was time to write The Aha Method.
I'm glad you did. It's a terrific book. And you also on your website have some amazing resources that honestly can help people build a great presentation right away. And I want to go back to TED because I think everyone loves the TED Talks. But what most people don't realize is they use 7 to 8 different cameras when they film a TED Talk, the official TED Talk, right? So the production value is top-notch. And why it seems so engaging is because you're getting different angles at different moments, right? They're bringing the emotion out. And so we've set ourselves up to think we should be a TED Talk when actually what most people want is just someone who's authentic and can tell a story right, and make a connection.
Absolutely. One of the great things about TED is that it has exposed an entire generation or two of people to this idea of incredibly persuasive and sometimes very content-dense public speaking. Okay, so that's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing that someone can get up and talk about esoteric part of humanity for 18 minutes and have 60 million people watch 18 minutes on this topic. That is a beautiful and wonderful thing. It's also dangerous because different kinds of storytelling require different kinds of approaches. Different kinds of storytellers require different kinds of approaches. I kind of talked down the idea of tips, tricks, and hacks. But one of the biggest one, if you want to call this a hack from the Aha Method, from the book, one of the biggest things that we talk about in the book is making sure that you finely tune the total amount of information that you're trying to deliver in a given period of time, the maximum amount of information that a person can naturally absorb and keep. It's not going to be possible in 30 minutes in a professional presentation for you to land more than a maximum of 3 important things that people are going to remember. 3, max. The rest of the 30 minutes, so if you imagine those 3 things, let's say each one of them take a minute, if you want people to absorb it, remember it, and leverage that, use it in the future, so digest it, process it, synthesize it, you've got basically 3 minutes of the presentation that are the points that you're trying to make, and the other 27 minutes are ways that you're approaching the point, creating space after the point, reinforcing the point, delivering other material which might create context for that. One of the biggest things that presenters tend to do, especially in a corporate context, is think that more is better when it comes to content. And more is never better.
So less is better, is what you're saying.
The right amount is the right amount, right? So everyone's got to leave any talk that you give, whether it's 4 minutes long or 40 minutes long, everybody needs to leave feeling like they got something of value out of it every single time. even if that's just you with your team of four people, that meeting, that talk, it better deliver some value that makes it worthwhile. Because every time you do that and don't deliver the expected value for the time spent, you're eating into the credibility that you've built with people. If you've got 5 minutes, you can maybe make one point. If you've got 15 minutes, you can make two. If you've got 30 minutes, you can make three. That's about it. You've got to really think about that. And that's really rooted in behavioral science around memory and cognition and synthesis that people absorb.
Well, it's really helpful to think about that way. And I think what I'd underline that is, if you're going to make one point in 5 minutes or 2 points in 15 and three maybe in 30, make sure they're the right points. So you've got to be really thoughtful about what are you really trying to get across, because it's not just about being an amazing communicator, but it's around what are the messaging and how do you align and what are you trying to influence? So I think it's brilliant.
One of the other things that's really changed in this era now that I think people in business in particular, and I think for people, operations folks and HR folks, this is especially important. When we were growing up and taught how to make a persuasive presentation or persuasive argument, we were taught to lay out our argument, tell people the points, and then repeat the argument that we were making. But because of the change in the way narrative has been delivered, some of this is TikTok, but a lot of this is just the storytelling we've consumed. If you tell people right up front what it is that you're going to tell them, they don't need to listen to the rest of the presentation. You're not making a compelling argument and you're not keeping them engaged. You actually need to build towards your points at all times the way a storyteller would build towards your points. And that is so frustrating, right? Because you're going to walk in, you're thinking about walking into a meeting now. Many of your listeners are thinking right now, like, okay, my boss has asked me to cut 5% on the staff and I've got to figure out who to cut, what the rubric is. So I built a presentation, who we're cutting, what the rubric is, or how we're going to staff up to a new, upskill people for a new thing that we're doing. And you just want to go in and have five really ugly PowerPoint slides with all the text on them, with all the bullet points on them. And I'm going to tell you, as annoying as this is, no, never. Just don't do that. Take the extra hour that it takes to produce a good-looking, highly effective presentation with good storytelling every single time you do it. I promise you, it really doesn't take that much more time and it will absolutely transform your career.
Let's talk more about that. One question you say in your book, that most of us are either being pitched or trying to pitch an idea.
Yeah.
Maybe go a little bit deeper around, what does this mean that we're either pitching or pitching us, and how do you sort of pitch the right way, to underline the point you just made?
Yeah. Let me use a touchy subject for this. I think maybe is part of the interesting point. Lately, I've been working with a bunch of companies on this idea that I call friend forward, the concept that companies have to start really leaning in on facilitating meaningful friendships between employees rather than over investing in team building, which has become, I think, kind of a hackneyed idea. And that if we want people to come back to the office, we want people to be high performers, we want them to be loyal long term, that meaningful friendships in the office are the best way to actually accomplish that. And that there's a whole other host of benefits to real friendships fostered in the workplace, especially in light of all the conflict and people not being able to talk to each other and all this kind of stuff. There's really meaningful work there. When you are having an interaction with somebody, let's just take somebody who you don't know that well, you might only have a cursory sort of relationship with. Every fiber of your being, if you're an observant person, and I'm going to exclude neurodivergent people here because the experience is really different. There's sort of more common standard neurological profile. So the average person in that experience with somebody who's new, your brain is making a million calculations a minute about whether or not you like this person, whether you trust this person, whether you think this person is somebody that you want to interact with, invest in, continue to do business with, communicate with. They are doing the same thing to you. Now, really good salespeople have learned how to harness that skill, sometimes instinctively, have learned how to harness that skill and use that to create a persuasive opportunity every single time. But even if you're not in sales, your brain is still doing that same exact work of trying to figure out whether or not you want to engage with that person, or better yet, open yourself up to a friendship with that person in the organization. Which means that the better you can understand the fact that you're being evaluated through that lens, the better you're able to start to put yourself forward. What I mean by this is, put yourself forward in an authentic way. I'm not saying you should be an inauthentic person in this setting, right? But rather to create opportunities for you to connect with others and sell yourself or your ideas to others in every possible scenario. And I'll tell you something really funny. In all the interviews I've done about the book, this question about persistent persuasion has been one of the most common questions that I get asked on podcasts, or I get asked on stage from people. Like, what do you mean by every interaction is persuasive? And what I mean is, whether you're willing to acknowledge it or accept it or not, your brain is making a sales calculation on the person that's sitting across from you. So you can choose to pretend that that's not a game that you're engaged in with others, or you can accept that and you can say, okay, well, that's reality, right? I've got to persuade. I need this other person to believe the thing that I'm saying. I approach every interaction with somebody as an opportunity to create a deeper connection, persuade them of the thing that I want to persuade them of, even if that's just that I am a trustworthy, good person that they want to interact with. That's the minimum. That's the baseline thing, right?
Yeah, and I think that resonates, I think, as HR people, especially if you're a talent person or an HR leader.
Oh, yeah.
We're constantly assessing credibility, competence. That's our job, right? We're always really trying to score this person a little bit. It's almost like that interview never stops for HR people. That's just how we operate.
100%. And on the other side, the people are also coming into this interaction, especially if you're in the business partner side of HR. There's a great deal of distrust and all kinds of other issues that exist between, you know, staff and human resources. But in every particular case, there's an opportunity. Every interaction is an opportunity to connect with other people, connect authentically, put your best foot forward, put your best ideas forward. Always have a good idea to put forward. Anytime that you're walking around every day, you ought to have two or three things that you have been contemplating, thinking about, that you'd love to advance, that you'd love to have, be able to make happen in your professional life, in your career, so that if the right opportunity presents itself, you're there and you're ready to deliver that idea.
That's such a great point, Gabe. And I heard this on a podcast, and I think it was Dori Clark, actually. I'm going to give her credit for it. And she talked about how when people would say, how are you doing? And people would say, oh, I'm fine. And she's like, right. Well, no, you should have a project you're working on. Say, hey, I'm doing great. I'm really working on this new thing. And it doesn't make us a lot more engaging, because all of us do have this project. It might be not riveting for me, but for you, it's really interesting. And if I'm interested and want to engage with you, that's something for me to talk more about, ask more questions, and build that relationship. And that way you are giving something to that person to grab onto, to grab that olive branch, if you will, and start to pull and pull that thread and build that real relationship. But if you just say, hey, things are good, it's Friday, or, you know, it's the normal answers, there's not a lot there. So you've got to give to get. And I think that your point is valid. For HR people, we should have something we're walking around with that we're excited to talk about.
And that's part of the reason why I wrote the AHA method in the way that I wrote it, which is a kind of comprehensive look at communication in a professional setting, right? So not just like, here's how you give a TED talk, but it's really like tried to give it a more rounded setting. Because I just think that the single most important skill that you can develop to improve your career is effective communication. That's obvious, right? I think that communication now requires a different modified skill set to deal with all the realities. I think we've learned a lot in the last 20 or 30 years that we can bring to the table for people in HR. There's tremendous opportunity to move forward by bringing some of these ideas that I talk about in the book.
I agree with you 100%. And let's talk a little bit more about the book, because you call it the AHA method. And it was super helpful for me as I prepared for a meeting recently. So I do appreciate it. But tell us more about what the AHA method is and how we apply it.
It's a big concept in some ways. And in other ways, it's a very simple idea. Okay. The very simple idea here is you want people to leave every interaction with you with that feeling of those little hairs standing up on the back of their neck when they've learned something or they've had a really strong positive engagement around something that's happened, as much as possible. Okay, that's not always possible to deliver that level of excitement. I mean, I imagine that, like, if you're following around Simon Sinek or something all day long, that you're going to have lots of moments of being like, what? Aha, that's amazing. Okay, I don't mean like you should be a walking font of professional skill, but rather that you are able to take those communication opportunities and really use them to engage and to create those aha moments. And especially in a structured presentation, you should be able to deliver those aha moments to people. And that is really an eye-opening moment where the person listening to you connects with the thing you say deeply enough that they say, that is something that I really want to engage with and bring forward. Every one of us has had that experience talking to someone when someone just says something and the pieces fit, the gears turn, and you're like, oh yeah, that's it, right? Oh, yeah, that's it. it doesn't always mean that that's the like definitive answer to everything, right? There's also cognitive biases. I talk about them in the book that can lead us to feel like we're engaging with something that's true when it may not be true. But regardless of that, I think the point of the AHA method is to help everybody be a better, more effective communicator and really drive home this idea that we're giving value and we're doing it in an effective way for today's listener.
What I took away is that really being thoughtful about when you want people to have an aha moment, to be like, where is the aha moment in this material? Because there's an aha moment there. How do you pull it out and how do you present it? So yeah, it keeps people engaged and wanting more, to your point earlier of don't tell them what I'm going to tell them.
Yeah, don't give it away up front. That's one thing. Don't put the points too close together. That's another thing that often people do. They've got two really important good points to make and they put them exactly back to back with each other without leaving any time for the listener to like absorb and process the thing that they're supposed to take away. If you're doing something like a presentation, particularly like over Zoom or you're doing it live and in person, you do need to repeat yourself several times. And the reason why you need to sometimes repeat yourself or repeat an idea more than once throughout the presentation is because people do tune out. Things happen. They're watching on the Zoom, but then like their phone buzzes at a time you can't control, like a notification from their spouse or their kids or something. So they're going to look at it. And in those 3 seconds that they look away from you, you're delivering the important point. If they didn't hear it, you don't get the value that you want. One other big thing about ahas and those aha moments is you've got to also give people a subtle lizard brain notion that you're going to arrive at a point that's really super important. If they've drifted away from you or they're doing something else, you've got to use different techniques like the volume of your voice or the tone of your voice or the pacing of the things that you say to get their subconscious brain to say, oh, something important is happening here and I need to refocus. I talk about it a lot in the book, but one of the rhetorical techniques is in the American Black Church, where preachers, we all are familiar with the patter. Like when I say that, you know the patter of a preacher, you've all heard this patter before. It involves a lot of staccato stopping and raising a voice and tone as they approach a point that they really want to make, sometimes like all the way off the scale, which was probably not appropriate in most professional settings. Anyway, the point is you can use all of these different techniques to kind of bring people's attention back and then deliver the important thing that was really, really crucial from your presentation.
There's a lot of wisdom and I really do recommend everyone checks out the AHA method because so much more to go into. We could probably talk for 2 more hours, but I do want to talk about gamification because it's rare that I get 2 experts in one. So, and we're not going to cover ice cream, even though that is one of my favorite topics. But let's talk about gamification. Tell us more about what that term means. What, as you said, a lot of our smartphones are gamifying everything.
When I first started talking about gamification, it was like 2009. Okay. So I was very young. This is the part where if you were watching me live, you would say, God, that's surprising, Gabe. You haven't aged a day. But I was a lot younger then. When we first started talking about it, really the idea was gamification was like, let's make everything as engaging and exciting as games can be. Here's, look at how compelling games are and look at how much we can bring this to other experiences. And I think what's happened is gamification has become a part of our lives and it's everywhere. It's in every social media app we use. It's in how we lose weight, how we learn languages, like all the different things. And so today it's very much become a backdrop part of life where we earn achievements or we get points or we see our progress on a progress bar. Right now, when we're recording this, we recently got our Spotify Wrapped for the year, which has all kinds of little numbers and stats about how we did this year. And people become really accustomed to and into these ideas of kind of constant stats and feedback. One of the most interesting things about that is HR has adopted gamification in a very big, a bold way where especially in learning and development, it's become a really big part of the equation. Today, the key thing to take away about gamification in the workplace is as we move into this new era where there's lots of additional transitions happening right now, we're trying to get people back to the office. We're trying to get people to communicate with each other in a time of great political strife and disconnection, all this kind of stuff. Gamification has an increasingly important role to play in softer skills development among people, because I really do believe that this, and this is why I was talking about this friend forward thing and why I've been working with companies on this friend forward idea, is because I think that so many soft skills are just simply not being taught in people's lives anymore. the American workplace is the last actually diverse world that people find themselves in. So the silos that social media puts us in, the hegemony of thought that universities are increasingly in, and of course the great sort, which has affected everybody's who they go to school with and who they live with and how their parents are and all this kind of stuff. The reality is people have sorted themselves into these silos and they come to the workplace unable to actually do certain things that in the past they would be able to do, like communicate effectively with somebody who has different opinions. It's going to be very important in this next generation for companies to upskill in the workplace on things which are very historically been very soft and things which we don't think that we need to teach people, like how to be friends with someone for real, might be something that we have to teach in this environment. We might have to teach people after so many years of describing workplaces as we're a family here or we're a team. We might have to teach people to not expect the company to have a perfect values alignment with everything they're thinking and feeling in order for it to be an effective location to work. This has been a huge thing for me, seeing people being mad at the company they work for because they don't have a perfect values alignment on every social or political issue. I mean, ultimately, that's absurd, right? This was a self-own on the part of companies, and frankly, I'm part of a lot of HR people, overselling the company as a family, overselling the company, bring your whole self to work. Did you really mean that? I don't think you really meant that. And people don't have the soft skills to do that anymore. Gamification's role in this next era of people at work in this great challenging era is going to be about helping people develop and acquire the crucial soft skills that they're going to need to make the workplace actually highly effective and efficient in a strange time.
Lots to unpack there. And I think, though, you're right. Gamification has a ton of room to even go further in L&D, coaching, soft skills. Sure. We're not really using that today. But I think with AI, I mean, I think there's a lot that can go on there. I know there are different startups trying to use AI for coaching, writing performance reviews, helping you practice to have a performance conversation. We're not there yet, but who knows, the next 4 to 5 years, AI gamification come together. Do you see that happening or any trends you see there?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think like right now, at this exact moment in time that we are recording this podcast, okay, would hopefully lives forever and people refer to it in 100 years. But at this moment that we're recording this podcast, I think most people are deeply concerned about AI and its impact on the world. And yesterday at dinner, the dear friend who's an expert, AI expert, and we were talking about this at length. There's lots of stuff to be concerned with if you're losing sleep about AI in the workplace. The things that you're losing sleep about AI in the workplace, not the things you should be losing sleep about. The things that you, as a leader of people right now, or as a leader in people operations or human resources, the thing you need to be concerned with is entire generations of employees are coming into the office. In COVID, millions of people got jobs working with people they've never met in person before, okay? Heretofore unknown phenomenon in American business, what happened over COVID that had never happened before at this scale. We are bringing so many people, really diverse people from all over the country into these workplaces that are virtual, live, and hybrid. We're trying to get incredible performance out of these people and increasing performance. We're bringing all of these different tools to bear. They are coming to the table brilliant and connected, but anxious, unable to communicate around a lot of important issues. I don't mean to make this like a political discussion, but the growing up in a trigger-free, safe space environment in which whatever that means as far as like being able to deal with conflict, where that ends up creating a problem is in the workplace. That's where that turns. It's not that big of a problem in high school. It's a really big problem in the workplace if people can't take feedback. We've got these couple of generations coming into the workplace with all kinds of stuff in an environment of tremendous technological change. And so I think the role that gamification and AI and good leaders play there is to support the development of core human to human connection. Whatever happens with the devices is whatever happens with the devices. But it's the human connections that we need to be facing, fostering, and using these technologies to really advance things like friendship. So that's where I think we have the greatest possible impact today.
I agree with you. Human to human contact and experience talking to people, sharing your emotions, building friendships, relationships, understanding someone's point of view is different from yours.
Yeah.
And empathizing with that point of view. So I have to agree with them. You can empathize is what the world really needs. Gabe, last question for you. What is one word or phrase that you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
Oh, I love that you asked me this question. This is such a good question. And for me, I'm going to say it again. The word for me is friendship. I think as the workplace reconfigures itself in this next era, and as machines take on an ever bigger part of what used to be work, the remaining time, the human to human time that remains in the workplace, that remains in our working lives, that time becomes increasingly valuable. That time needs to build new fidelity, more powerful pathways of communication and connection that are able to scale and grow and develop. We spent a lot of time in the early 2000s talking about how to bring startup culture, startup mentality to corporate America, right? These were ideas like move quickly, break things, ask for forgiveness, not for permission, all this kind of stuff. Ultimately, the real thing we should have brought from the startup world, as somebody who comes from that environment steeped in tech startups, the thing that's now so clear to me, it's more clear to me than it ever has been, is that the friendships that I developed in the trenches of a startup are like the friendships that military people develop in the trenches of the military. They are deep. They're able to deal with disruption. They have high fidelity. They create a lot of opportunity for feedback and communication. They last forever. The loyalty that's built there lasts a very, very long time. Corporate America missed the point by overinvesting in things like team building and overinvesting in the company being this parental figure to employees in this warm environment. What we really need to do is get back to or develop a context where we have those really meaningful friendships and they outlast whatever the machines throw at us in this next generation of AI.
Friendships. The future of HR is all about friendships. I love it, Gabe. And the book is The Aha Method, Communicating Powerfully in a Time of Distraction. Thank you so much for being on the Future of HR podcast. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR podcast. Thanks again to Gabe for sharing his thoughts and insights on the art of communication. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past episodes and learn more about our mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, be sure to subscribe, share our podcast with at least one other person, or even better, please leave a review on Apple or Spotify podcasts. This really helps us to grow this podcast and helps with our mission of inspiring the next generation of HR leaders. And I'd love to hear from you as well, so feel free to drop me a line on LinkedIn and let me know if you have ideas for future shows or what you liked about today's show. We'll be back next week with Sean Mayo, who is the Chief People Officer for the Arizona Cardinals Football Club. Yes, you heard that right. Sean is in the NFL, and we're going to talk to him about what it's like to be a Chief People Officer in the NFL and how the organization is working to instill a championship culture on and off the field, with HR's help, of course. If you're sad the NFL season's over, be sure to tune in next week. It'll be a show you won't want to miss. Thanks again for listening to the Future of HR and being part of our community.